All right, ladies and gentlemen, you wouldn't believe it if I told you, but it's true. You hit the play button on yet another...
Kevin, another AVID episode of V8 Radio.
Ooh, AVID. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that means...
That means having or showing a keen interest in, or enthusiasm for something.
Nice. Like an AVID golfer.
Yes, exactly. AVID podcast listener.
Well, hopefully you're an AVID car enthusiastic aficionado. And
all
you
day.
Enjoy this kind of nonsense because you've tuned into the VA Radio podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Oostie, joined as always by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Hubal Clark.
And I'm feeling very AVID today.
Yeah, you sound like it.
How about it?
Yeah. AVID is only a couple letters away from a verse, I think.
That's true.
And not like a rhyme.
We're walking a thin line there.
That's right. And the other thin line we walk is the one that tiptoes into the world of automotive trivia, which for those who listen to every episode, who, you know, is everybody, right? They know that the beginning of every episode of this podcast, we start off with an automotive trivia question. We throw the question out at the front half, and we make you sit glued to the podcasting device all the way through to the end where we reveal the answers. And then, man, everything is just so much nicer in the world.
It is. It's blue skies in the middle of the night. It's great.
Yes. So, yeah. For our AVID trivia fanatics, have you prepared a question this episode?
Certainly, certainly, certainly. So, Kevin, so last episode... if our listeners recall, you asked me what a Mighty Mike was.
Oh, right, I did.
You did. So I'm going to ask you, what is a Gentleman Jim?
A Gentleman Jim. Mm. A Gentleman Jim is, it came out before the Mighty Mike, and it is another one of those specialty truck packages. It's an option package, but this one on a GMC Jimmy. Actually, a GMC pickup truck, but the GM, you know, spells Jim, so they call them Gentleman Jim. And it was an appearance package and some luxury seats and, you know, a few things like that. There was things, you know, Dodge had the little Red Express truck and the Warlock for high performance versions. The Warlock's the rare one. That was the Plymouth, I think. But the real weird one was the Canadian, which was a Dodge Dude. You ever see one of those?
Dodge Dude?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's like a Fargo truck. It's Canadian. And our friend Cliff Ganahan has one.
Does he?
Yeah.
Right on Cliff.
Yeah. So anyway, I
wonder if it has any decals on it.
It's got decals by the shekels. So anyway, the Gentleman Jim is a GMC pickup truck. I think they're black with gold trim on them, maybe, or something along those lines. And that's my guess.
Okay. How about a bonus, if you're correct? What years was it available?
I want to say it was a square body style, like 70... 3-4, somewhere around there. I don't think it got into the later disco versions, you know, 78-9, and I don't think it was an earlier body style. So I'm going to say like 73-4, somewhere around there. I could be wrong on that, but that's just a bonus.
Correct. That, as in, it is just a bonus.
Well, okay. You know, which means it's not going to affect the amazing prize I win for all this.
Correct.
Which is nothing.
It will not affect that.
Assuming I win.
Right on.
This is one of the longest standing contests where the winner wins nothing.
It's almost like the German word of the day on the Stubborn German podcast.
Yes, also a non-prize adventure. But
of which you are a two-time winner.
Yeah, by pure luck.
Well,
pure luck.
It's more than anybody else.
Well, you know what? I think you might be right. I actually came... We're trying to flip that one because, see, on this show, we believe in the fairness and enjoyment of equality where each person gets their question and each person gets a chance to answer. The Stubborn German podcast is where the owner of the Stubborn German Brewing Company, throws out the question to everybody else and doesn't have to play right. along.
Yeah.
But I came up with a really killer one that I would love to turn the tables on. Maybe I'll see if I can work that in next time.
Yeah, do that. Chris and Chris Ron, if you're listening, let's change it up a bit. Come on, babe.
He is one of our three listeners, by the way.
So, he is. Yeah. He is a good listener. I appreciate that.
And, you know, a couple other shout-outs real fast. I've learned that Kelly's got some family that listens to this, so we appreciate that. And right our good longtime friend and listener, Mr. Alex Gearhard, is rocking and rolling on his Cougar engine rebuild.
He really, really is. He is going all the way with that engine. He's I've been keeping up with him on that. He's got that at the machine shop, the blocks at the machinist. He's buying parts. He's getting ready, and it's gonna be a real screamer.
Yeah, it's gonna be a cool car. I dig those Cougars. Mm-hmm. So right on. It's
convertible at that, a 73 Cougar convertible.
Yeah. It's totally cool.
It's a killer.
So keep pressing on, Mr. Alex. Appreciate it. All right, so I have prepared a trivia question for you, and it could be like a slam dunk, super easy one. We'll find out.
Okay.
We're going to dip into your Italian word of the day.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, I know. You've been to Italy, right?
Well, for about an hour.
See? I try to, you know... I try to truncate all my vacations to an hour or less.
Well, it wasn't a vacation. Yeah. We were flying back on a mission, and we landed, but we couldn't get off the jet. So
you were you were like on American soil. You didn't even go to Italy.
Well, technically, yeah, I guess.
And you were on an air base, right?
Yes, at Aviano Air Base.
So I guess it's Italy. An Italian base.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know how that all shakes out, but... But during your stay, I'm sure you picked up some choice Italian phrases.
For sure.
We'll get right to it. What does testa rossa mean?
Ooh.
Of course, referring to the...
What does testa rossa mean?
Famed Ferrari race car and eventually street car of
That's
the same
right.
name, the Ferrari testa rossa.
Oh, man. I freaking know this, too. Ah!
This is standard issue first hour Italian lessons, so you've had your first hour. So.
Yeah. Oh, for Pete's sake, Michael.
By the way, sometimes we hear that phrase often. Ah, oh, for Pete's sake, Michael. Whose voice is that we're hearing?
My mother.
That's your mother? Ah, for Pete's sake, Mike.
In my head. That's exactly what it is.
Nice. Well, cameo appearance by Mama Q there.
From Q-Ball's mom. Okay, getting back. Testa rossa.
Yes.
Testa rossa. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh.
Mm-hmm. Not ponderosa, mind you.
That makes me hungry.
Hey, you know. Everything's better at the ponderosa. Okay.
I'm just gonna throw a whack out there. See, testa rossa means race car.
Ooh. So let's try something. Assortistat.
Well,
so it doesn't
you.
Work. It doesn't work backwards like race car. Testarossa.
No.
So in Italian, that trick doesn't work, but it might be.
No, nope.
We'll find out.
Oh, brother, that's a good question too. Gosh darn it! I knew what that meant before. I'm having just a complete brain fade. It may come to me in the middle of the show, but I know it'll be too late.
Well, I'll tell you what. If it does come to you, just feel free to throw it out there.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. If it just hits you, you know, you wake up in the middle of the show and go, hey!
Right.
Yeah. So, pretty exciting times all around V8 land. You and I and our buddy just got back from a whirlwind tour of the world-class, awesome city of Cleveland.
Cleveland, Ohio. When you think world-class cities, you think Cleveland.
Well, for sure. Cleveland backwards is world-class city.
Totally.
If you didn't know that. And it was a spur-of-the-moment thing, and our buddy kind of planned this, and he and I flew out of the St. Louis airport, Lambert Field there, and didn't even get a direct flight. We had to stop at Midway, and we get off to go to our next gate, and lo and behold, there's Cue Ball waiting
to
join us, a total surprise, so that was fun. And then we proceeded to go to Cleveland and spend 3 days of pretty intense enjoyment of the culture and the food and some
fine dining
and everything from corner bars to tiki bars to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to something on the 32nd floor and everything in between. So,
you know, Cleveland's my hometown, but I left Cleveland when I was 15 years old. I grew up in the suburb, but I left the area when I was 15. So I never really got to know it all that well. And this was really fun for me because had worked in the area. He'd go to Cleveland fairly regularly. So he knew a lot of these cool places to visit. And that's what we did. And it was neat learning about my hometown. And I really appreciated that.
I really dug it. And what I really like about Cleveland is, so I grew up in a Chicago suburb, and I was always a big fan of the some of the older cities in the U.S. I mean, I guess I'll say east of the Mississippi cities in the U.S.
Sure.
And, of course, Chicago has basically a twin in San Francisco. They both grew up at the same time, and they've got similar architecture. But anyway, Cleveland also has that same kind of look. You got, you know, early skyscrapers and modern stuff and everything in between, some things that are like Skidmore, Owings and Merrow, and you know, Mies van der Rohe-esque glass box type stuff and classical skyscraper architecture. But what it doesn't have is all the stuff that I find annoying in cities, like way too many people and horns honking all the time and people that won't get out of your way and people that just suck. So that was really enjoyable. I was very impressed, and it was a very nice place to go visit.
It was nice being able to get around the downtown area easily.
Yeah.
Like you said, people not yelling at you or cars honking at you. It was fairly quiet. I mean, I made the remark of, I wonder how economically viable all this is, but for now, I really dig it.
Yeah, right. It's a little spooky that it's not super jammed, but I wasn't complaining. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was great. I'd never been there before. It's a place, some places are like a sanctuary where you know, quietly read and look at the exhibits. And then there's some that are interactive and that you crank them up and you rock out and everything in between. And I'm assuming you felt the same thing I did through that.
Absolutely. I'd been to the Rock Hall one time before, but it was a few years ago, and it was like I hadn't been there before. I mean, I remember a few things, but it's so cool to really get down and dirty and look at these artifacts and read about them and really kind of be in the moment with them and say, you know, this is the guitar that Jimi Hendrix played over the Watchtower. And this is a 54 Les Paul gold top guitar that somebody played. And
Greg Allman,
exactly.
And it's
just
guitar.
Amazing seeing these things there. I mean, these are the actual pieces.
Yeah, that's what's so cool about it. It's all authentic. It's the stuff. And if it's a reproduction of something, they note it on there, you know.
Correct.
But not many. It was all legit stuff. So that was killer. And then we got some car guy stuff in. We visited with a good friend of mine, Mr. Gary Case. And I met Gary in, I think, about 1997 or 8. Gary was the founder of Style and Concepts and subsequently the Sport Truck Nationals event. and grew that to be very successful, and then worked with, at the time it was Peterson Companies, maybe right when the EMAP company bought Peterson, and took over their events. So he ran the Hot Rod Power Tour and the Power Festivals and the Rod and Custom, I don't know if it was the AmeriCruise at that point, and then a couple of the other off-road stuff, and really made those successful events. And Gary is a Riddler winner from 91. He built a 32 Ford that had a like a Boyd chassis and, mm-hmm. you know, the rest of the touches on it. And then he kind of got out of the event deal and started another company called Hot Rod Hardware, which I'm sure we've all gotten one of those catalogs along the way, the catalogs with the neon lights and the bar stools and all the, you know, garage stuff that hot rod guys like, which right. he eventually sold that to Summit Racing. So that catalog became part of the Summit deal. And today, Gary, up until very recently, was kind of a partner in a shop called Street Machinery that builds cars and finds cars and sells cars. And he also kind of managed all the cars that went over to the Global Auto Salon in Riyadh. He was part of that whole deal. So Gary and I go way, way back, and he's a real good friend. And it was real fun to sit back and hang out with Gary in his hometown of Cleveland, because he showed us the world's greatest pastrami sandwich.
He did. Actually, it was a corned beef sandwich.
Yeah, right. Well, they had both, you know, whatever one you wanted.
Yeah, they did. But my gosh, that was amazing. We went to a lunch place called Slimans in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, take a note, Carnegie Deli. This place has got it. Holy cats. Yeah.
Not messing around.
No, not messing around at all. And Gary, that guy is the real deal.
Oh, yeah.
He is.
Yeah, yeah.
He's 100% legit.
He's one of those guys you can't really tell many stories to because he's already done it himself.
Right, twice.
The story might be about him. You know,
yeah. So, or he'll start correcting you. No, let me tell you how it really went down. This is what happened.
Oh, without a doubt. And that's one of the things that's really fun for me is that having worked, you know, quasi together at some of these companies and knowing a lot of the same people, he was at a much higher level than I was. I was a peon, and he was rubbing elbows with the brass, and he was a freelancer. So he didn't have to answer to anybody, you know, he was a contractor. He could do or say whatever he wanted. So to hear a lot of the stories from his perspective, you know, and compare them to the way that I thought they went down or heard they went down back in the day, to kind of get the real story, it was a lot of fun. You might have been bored out of your mind hearing some of these things, but
not at all. No, I was hanging out of every word. I loved it. It is so cool to get the, you know, the legit scoop of things, especially from, you know, from the horse's mouth.
Yeah. Well, today, Gary and you know, the car builder extraordinaire, Mr. Bobby Alloway, are putting together an event that's going to happen in September in Nashville called the Triple Crown of Rodding. And the lineage of this event, it goes back like 40 years in its previous iteration as Shades of the Past is what it was called. And the Shades people decided to, I don't know, they came to the end of the run for that show, but the location was already there. People were already used to going to Nashville at that time of year. So Alloway and Case kind of took it over, and they're turning up the heat on this thing. It is going to be a really cool event.
Yeah, and it'll be a huge event.
Yes, and in my opinion, they're doing everything right. I mean, they've got top builder, celebrity, you know, judges, your Foos, your Troy Trepanier, your Roadster Shop guys, your, you know, all the top builders are going to be there, not only displaying cars but judging cars for these Triple Crown awards. There's a muscle car award, there's a hot rod award, and there's a truck award, and the winner gets this awesome trophy. It's a giant, you know, 2 foot tall billet, chrome plated, custom made heavy trophy that was, you know, one of them I think the hot rod one was designed by Eric Brockmeyer, who's a renowned hot rod artist, design renderer. And then just all the logistics and all the things that they're doing are like really cool for car enthusiasts. And people are lining up to be there already, and we're many months out. So it's pretty exciting. It's going to be cool. And I'm going to be doing a couple of little promo videos for them. Because I want to help somehow. It's just one of those things.
Sure.
And if we play our cards correctly, we'll be able to have Mr. Case as a guest here right on this very program.
Ooh, that'll be nice.
And he can tell us all about the Triple Crown, as long as we don't veer off on all the rest of the all the rest of the stuff.
No kidding. Yeah, he's a cool guy. Yeah, so that just to let anyone know who wants to read more about it, that website is triplecrownofrodding.com.
Yes. Yeah,
you
check it out.
Go right there and check it all out. There's a video of Gary talking about it, and you can hear it again from the man himself.
Did you watch that video?
No, I just stumbled on it, but I'm gonna.
He needed to get the message out there to potential sponsors and people that had a bunch of questions about this. So he made this video himself, and it's like, I don't know, 12 or 13 minutes long, because there's a lot of stuff in it. But it's really mostly Gary sitting on his desk telling, like he's talking to you or I. I mean, like the PG version of him, talking to you or I. But those who know him are like, yeah, there he is. So it's cool. So I think at the very least, like I said, a little promo, maybe a guest appearance. And as we record this, it's towards the end of February. So the springtime is starting to kick off, and the summer event season's already stacked up, and it's cool. So this past weekend, I was doing a little garage, after we got back from Cleveland, I was doing a little garage cleaning, and I decided to back the 70 Buick out of the garage to clean up the garage, and it didn't really want to start very well, and it kind of aggravated me, because it's one of those things where I know it just needed a little attention, and I just haven't had time to do it. So I said, you know what? We're going to take care of this. So it's got a Street Demon carburetor on it, and I backed it out into the sunlight and opened the hood and took a look at it and took the carburetor off the car. And we had done some tuning on this thing a while ago with an air fuel meter for like part throttle and full throttle. So the top end is dialed, but the choke was veering out of adjustment. So I noticed that the throttle blade, this is a type of carburetor that has transfer slots, where it's a little, slot at the base plate that allows just a little bit of air to come through into a circuit that blends idle and part throttle. So it's like creating a little vacuum to just kind of start that throttle fuel happening in addition to the accelerator pump, if that makes sense. So when you're, the way a carburetor works, when you're idling, it's breathing through the idle circuit. And then as soon as you give it a little fuel, a little throttle, the plates open, and then it stops breathing through the idle circuit, and it starts breathing down the throat of the carburetor through the big circuit. And sometimes you get a stumble there because there's a transition between switching from the idle circuit and the, primary circuit,
the main metering circuit, right?
Yeah, and they make these little slots in there, which kind of blend that little air signal, if you will,
kind of like an off idle.
Yeah, right. And if you don't have that adjusted right, you could be over relying on the idle circuit or under relying on the next one, and blah, blah, blah. So that, it turns out that was off a little bit. And if that's not right, it's going to throw off your fast idle adjustment. And it can also throw your choke off. And in this case, the timing was set to compensate for that. The timing was used to change the idle speed. So took the carb off, drained it, wiped it down, flipped it over, looked at those slots, started there, adjusted them to the proper, 30 thousandths of an inch opening, and then kind of gave it a little bit more fast idle, if you will, a little high idle setting, and put it back on the car, lubed up the choke linkage real nice, made sure all that stuff was real smooth, and put a vacuum gauge on it, started up, and adjusted the idle screws to where it had optimal, it had huge vacuum. This is a 39,000 mile, you know, 53-year-old, completely stock engine that's never been apart.
Good heavens.
And it was making like almost 19 inches of vacuum.
Really?
At idle? Yeah, it was crazy. 18 and a half.
On a 70, 455. That's crazy.
On a 455, yeah, it was. I was like, wow. And typically what I like to do is tune that idle for the, you know, most vacuum, and then turn the screws back on the idle mixture or on the idle speed if the speed's too high. But this one, I knew I didn't want to mess with the idle speed because I just had set that for the transfer slot adjustment, which means that our idle speed was too high because of timing. So I retarded the base timing a little bit.
Okay.
And took it for a cruise, and it pinged just a touch, so it still had a little too much timing in it.
Still
pulled it back
quick,
another degree or two. I sacrificed a little bit of vacuum, so now we're down to about 17 and a half inches, which is still
great.
Insane. Yeah, amount of vacuum. And now this thing starts before it does half a rotation.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
Oh, it's wonderful. So
choke
linkage is buttery, and it clicks into place, you know, the way it's supposed to. And it just got, you know, these things get gummed up or bent a little bit. And
and
what a lot of people don't realize today is modern cars, you know, they're so nice. You never never have to do anything like this.
Correct. That's right. Yeah, these cars, you had to do maintenance, periodic maintenance, those choke linkages.
Because I had this thing dialed exactly like this, you know, 4 years ago, and then I haven't looked at it since. But if you look at, you know, how a carburetor works, there are little metal arms and rods that attach things to other things. And it, as you put your throttle down, one thing pivots and it pushes on a little rod, which connects to another thing, which pulls on another rod. And all these things need to be in the proper sequence and the right amount. And you adjust them literally by bending them.
You're right.
It's
Isn't that wild?
It is. Bend tang, you know, to bend rod. So you put a little feeler gauge in there for an adjustment, and then you bend it to match. Well, because you can bend them into place, they also unbend through use.
Right on.
and that's how things start to change. And if they change, and the other thing is, the thing sits a while, you know, this car is not driven every day, so something might get a little sticky or varnishy in there, and there you go. So it can be frustrating to go, you know what, I just spent all this money on this carburetor, you know, 2 years ago, and now I got to mess with it. Well, you do.
Congratulations. It's doing exactly what it's designed to.
Yeah. But just be hopeful, because if you take a minute and, you know, understand what everything's doing, understand that if this pushes that and it pushes this and it's supposed to be this much and it says this in the book, and familiarize yourself, it's like, oh, well, here you go. We need a 30-second less opening size over there. Crank it back, put it together. You don't think it's going to make a difference a lot of times, these little tiny adjustments.
Right.
But show enough.
Well, that's funny you mentioned that, because on the GTO, you know, it's still using the divorced mechanical choke, and the choke rod, it came off of the choke stove, right? And it kind of lodged itself, so the choke butterfly wouldn't fully open, and it was causing an amazing amount of drivability issues with that car.
Oh, you're stumbling and running rich.
Oh, it was ridiculous.
Coughing. Yeah.
And once they fixed it, it was a whole new car again. It's crazy how that affects it.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and that little choke stove is just a coil-up spring, and it just pushes up on that rod, and it's like, I don't know, an ounce of pressure on the spring. It's like you're collapsing it with your thumb going, this can't be doing anything. There's no way this does
it. Right, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, and I went through the same thing on my van. I had to, you know, we're dialing in one thing at a time, and the choke was giving me an issue, and sure enough, I had to put a choke stove on it, just like you're talking about, that bolts in the manifold, and it heats up and uncoils the spring and opens up the choke valve. Yeah. And the original one didn't open up enough. It just was out of gas, you know, from being 43 years old. Mm-hmm. And man, does that thing start fast. That thing starts faster than the Buick. I mean, I think that's like 10 degrees and boom, it lights.
That's beautiful, man.
It's almost weird. It's like as soon as you click the key, it's running. It's like, wow, that is cool. That one still has a little bit of it's got a stumble in it somewhere, though, right after idle that I'm still kind of chasing. But we'll get there. One thing at a time.
Yep. And just you're real methodical about it. So that's good.
Yeah, you have to be. You can't change six things at once, or you don't know which one worked or didn't.
Right.
And then you're exactly.
You don't know if you canceled something out. You know, the one thing you changed worked, but the other thing you changed negated that.
Yeah, and I think we all remember, those of us who have rebuilt carburetors in the past, that, you know, the first time you tear into a Holley or a Quadrajet in particular, because you'd get the rebuild kit from your parts store, and it comes in a little square, like mini pizza box.
Yep.
And it's wrapped in plastic, and in there are like 40 parts, and you need six of them. Because they span every single Quadrajet that was ever made. And the first thing you do is take the 50 million time photocopied instructions that come out of the box that you can barely read, right?
You're right.
These were fresh and crisp in, you know, 1968, and they've just been copied and copied and copied and put in boxes and put in boxes. So now they're all kind of blurry and everything. And you throw those out. And then the perimeter of the little pizza box has a perforated, seam in it that you tear off what are little gauges and little measurement tools that you use to set the opening of the choke and the distance of a certain, pull-off rod adjustment,
flow
levels and all that stuff. Well, so you ignore all that too, and you tear the thing apart and put the parts you think are supposed to have back together, and then just kind of wiggle things around and go, yeah, it looks pretty good, and you put it on there, and
it's great.
runs worse than it did before you started. You really have to look at the instructions and understand what you're doing, because those tiny little adjustments, man, make all the difference.
Well, even though the Quadrajets all look alike, they're very, very different from year to year. Little minor changes have happened for improvements. Mm-hmm. And so a float pivot for a 67 Quadrajet may not work for a 70 Quadrajet because they made an improvement in, I think, like 69. Mm-hmm. So those things you have to be, cognizant of when doing things like this, that even though they look alike, they're not the same.
Right, and that really speaks to finding one that was never torn apart and mismatched with the wrong stuff. Because if the original parts are there, you can get it back to what it's supposed to be without knowing that, look, it's the wrong float. Or because all the pieces will interchange, they just won't work the same.
Correct.
So it was nice to get that thing dialed in and took the RIV for a drive. Haven't driven it, I don't think, since it's been 3 or 4 months since I drove this car. And appreciating the joys of the battery tender,
Sure.
Batteries are nice and topped off. I got it in my Galaxy sitting here in the garage. And, every week or so I just unplug. I only have one tender because I'm a cheap person, So,
because I unplug it from,
that's it. I pull it off of one and plug it into the other one. And then a couple of days later, I'll pull it off the other one and stick it back on the first one. And, it's got a set of alligator clips on each battery with a little, trailer plug, it looks like, peeking out of the grill. And it's really easy to do.
Nice.
Just switch it over. There you go.
I love it.
Batteries are always happy and eager and ready to go.
Nice.
So, yeah. So, What is also very interesting is the answer to our trivia questions that people have been waiting on for so long.
All right, Kev. So I asked you what the Gentleman Jim was, and you came out of the gate hot that it's a GMC pickup luxury package. And pretty much, yeah, that's exactly what it is. So hey! Ding, 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 ding.
All right.
Yeah, it could, you can get things like power steering and air conditioning.
Ooh, so posh.
Yeah, exactly. And I had like leather buckets with a center console.
Cool.
And
have you ever seen that? That is super rare.
It is. I saw a picture of that. Yeah, it's killer. And it was in that black and gold color scheme. And for the bonus, I asked you what years it was available, and it was a 75 only.
So model. Close.
But it was a square body, so you were right about that. So
I said 3 and 4, so yeah, close enough.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, cool looking truck with the long bed on there. I really dig it.
It is cool. And what I thought was interesting when I first learned of those is my mind immediately went to, oh, look, it's a Smokey and the Bandit truck.
Right on.
But it's not. It's before that.
Yeah, and, it is.
You know, that black and gold color scheme, once again, was that one of our trivia questions? Where did that come from? Should have been.
I don't think so.
Do you know where the black and gold, it was the inspiration for the Bandit Trans Am.
The Gentleman Jim was?
No, the black and gold color scheme came from somewhere that was the inspiration for the Gentleman Jim and for the Trans Am. Because you never saw black and gold before like 75, 74, 75. Yeah.
No, that I don't know what the inspiration was.
It came from the Formula One team of the John Player Special. And now you really? Can remember in your head the F1 car that was all black and it had gold pinstriping on it. And John Player was a cigarette brand in England. And it was called the John Player Special, promoted by a tobacco company. And Pontiac said, that's kick-ass. And they took that color scheme for the Trans Am.
Oh, I just brought a picture of it up. Yeah, that is cool.
Oh, they were awesome. Yeah, yeah. Great-looking car. One of the best-looking Formula One paint schemes, I thought, ever.
Without a doubt. Heck yeah.
So there's a free trivia question with answer all at once.
How about that? We are givers and givers and givers on this show.
You knew you listened this far for a reason. There it is. All right. So I asked you, what does testarossa mean? And your answer was, oh, for Pete's sake, Michael. Careful over there.
Whoops.
And then you threw out, I'm just going to throw this out there, and I'm going to say it's the word race car in Italian.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sorry to say, that's not quite. Testarossa actually means redhead.
Redhead.
Rosa is red. I'm guessing Testa means head.
Gosh, and, dang it to heck.
The Ferrari, all right, so in 50... I don't know the first year, 56, 57, one of those two, I think. Their racing version of their GT car was set apart in the fact that it had a 3-liter V12 that the cam covers were wrinkle coated red for the race version, and they just called it a red head. And there you go.
Well, heck.
Yes, pretty neat, huh?
That is pretty neat. That is pretty neat. And I believe I did know what that meant at one time, but I just, gosh dang it, it wouldn't come to me.
Well, there was 1 hour when you were in Italy, you knew it.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was absolutely. Some testarossas walking around.
Just driving all over the flight line, absolutely.
Well, maybe there was some walking around.
Right.
Some Italian redheads.
Walking around. You know? I got you. Hey, oh. Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Well, the Testarossa concept is an idea for another vehicle that's in my mind. And, you know, for years I've been sitting on this list of awesome cars that I think would be killer to build. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I mean, the list is getting long, and some of them have coincidentally been built by other people just because the idea was there. It just organically, somebody else landed on it as well. And for a long time, I thought, you know what? I got to sit on these because I can't let these out. You know, if I let these out, somebody else will build them.
And then I can't be the second guy to build them. I got to be the first guy.
Well, right. So now I'm to the point, we need to be the first guy to build this. So they need to get out. So somebody goes, I dig that. You need to build that. And let's work together on it. So I'm trying to think of the best way to do this. You know, maybe it's going to be a video or, you know, sharing some renderings of, you know, story time of Fantasy Car and, you know, click here if you want it and we'll figure out how to build it kind of thing. But I finally, we just came through the AMBR, America's Most Beautiful Roadster season at the Grand National Roadster Show in California. And I've always loved that competition. I love those cars, but I never really thought I had a dog in the fight to be able to enter into something like that with the right idea. And then it happened.
Ooh.
It was only a week ago that the idea kind of came into my mind of something that I think would be, because to compete over there, it's got to be not just build quality, it's got to make sense. And the car part choices and fabrication and how it all fits together, somebody has to look at it from across the room and go, oh, check that out, and then get up close and go, oh, damn.
You're right.
Look at that. And then later on go, oh, now it all makes sense because, you know, and I think I have that idea, so.
Oh, nice. Well, don't tell us yet.
Yeah, no, and that's where I'm at. It's like, well, do I tell you? It's not like somebody else is going to build this thing tomorrow and then go win the AMBR. What do? I say, well, I should have won that, but I don't have the trophy right now anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Hey, man, that's my trophy, bro.
Yeah, that was my idea, pal.
you owe me that trophy.
Did you patent it? Did you own it? Does it have your name on it? No. No. So for the spirit of the idea getting out there so that anybody can share it and enjoy it, because everybody should see these, I'm just shifting my focus, and I'll just start presenting them willy-nilly.
Right on.
And hopefully we get the nod to build them, because they came from a lot of, you know, thought and experience and gestalt moments like that one I had last week when I went, ah, there you go.
That's it.
There it is.
Well, good. Let's make it happen.
Heck yeah. Working on it. All right, man. Well, I'm learning that our 3-day visit to Cleveland really took a lot out of me. And I'm still recovering.
Right.
Thank you to the fine people of Cleveland and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and a whole slew of dive bars and tiki bars and other places. Boy. And our good friend, Mr. Gary Case, for hanging out with us, because it was a lot of fun. I recommend it.
Yeah, and our good friend Mr. for putting it together for us.
Heck yeah. Yeah, that was really a nice treat.
Yep.
For sure. All right, well, that's all I got, man.
Yeah, that is all I have as well.
All right, well, we appreciate you hanging with us. You know, we've started doing a little more promotion on this show, dropping a little 30-second clip here and there. We're getting a lot more people that are discovering our podcast. So if you just recently have, welcome. Click that subscribe button and, you know, you'll get the opportunity to play along with our next silly trivia game. And that's pretty much all I got, man.
Yeah, man. Good times.
Always a good time. So keep your eye on V8SpeedShop.com for new updates on the machine shop. And for Mr. Mike Cueball Clark, I'm Kevin Ostie, reminding you, the phrase just came into my head from when I was in grade school where the kids used to pick on the other one saying, I'd rather be dead than have red on my head, but I don't think that's true anymore. We'll see you next time on VA Radio.
Jeez.